Hello, and welcome to Reject Modernity. I'm Conrad, and here with me is Brian. And today we're talking about common things that you did not know cause brain damage. Starting off, we have not exercising. This is a very interesting thing. And here's an interesting thing, because we actually mentioned this last time, the link between exercise and cognitive ability.
Yeah, that's what I was... That's another thing. What you're not doing, like exercising, it's bad for your mental health and your brain.
I have this study here published in the American College Sports Medicine Journal.
Okay.
Basically, it said that exercise effects on the brain cause it to produce more BDNF. BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, is a key chemical in learning and long-term memory. So basically, if you exercise more, your brain is going to get better at learning and remembering things that happened a long time ago. Whereas if you don't exercise, your memory is going to be worse, and therefore you're not going to learn as quickly as other people.
Well, it's not just that, because BDNF was actually like has neuro, like it allows neurons to grow. So when neurons are exposed to BDNF, this chemical, they actually like grow at a much higher rate and stuff. So it's like exercising regularly can actually increase the rate at the neurons grow and interconnect with each other. So
right, so it makes you better at learning.
Yeah, it makes you better at learning and retaining information. So it has effects on learning, memory, just like clarity and focus. It has a whole list of positive effects on your psyche, pretty much.
Yeah.
Not exercising is one of the worst things you can do, obviously for your physical health, but surprisingly for your mental health as well.
And we should clarify here, we're not talking about, like, some people who are very unhealthy consider exercise like walking is exercise, or like maybe like doing weird motions in a pool that you stand in. But this is strenuous exercise we're talking about here. To get the
best
results,
you're alienating our old listeners. You're alienating the elderly.
The elderly, they already know it all. This is Reject Modernity. The elderly, they already know.
All right, that's fair.
But this is strenuous exercise we're talking about. So that means exercising and actually being tired. Because if you don't exercise when you're tired, you don't get better. And your brain doesn't get sharper. So that's what's really key to this.
Well, if walking or like water aerobics is where you have to start, I think that's totally a healthy and fine starting place. It just shouldn't be the end all be all of exercise. You definitely need to get in like intense aerobic exercise, like running is ideal.
Running is very good for you.
Yeah, except I mean, if you run too much, there can be effects on your joints and things like that, but. But for the most part, yeah, running, swimming, some of the best things you can do for your health is regular cardio. Unfortunately, it's also the hardest to do. I've never gotten into running. I'm trying to start this year. I'm actually going to go on a jog tonight after this episode. So.
Oh, hell yeah.
See how that goes, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm big into running, and actually, this is our first time recording where I'm actually standing while recording.
Oh.
That's because I run so much that sitting, it has a negative impact on your posture and therefore your running form. So I'm using a standing desk more so I can improve my posture when I'm not running, so I can have better form when I am running.
Right. And so we talked about BDNF and exercise, but that's not the end of the story. So, I mean, that's really just scratching the surface, because exercise is probably the most holistically good thing you can do for your body, just period. You're going to gain muscle, which is going to increase your metabolism, because muscles burn energy just by having muscle mass. They require more calories from your metabolism. They increase your resting metabolism, is what I'm trying to say. And also, exercise has extreme positive effects on mood. It has extremely positive effects on focus, on all these things that we see doctors constantly prescribing drugs for more and more. is people don't even know that there is like an extremely easy solution. Although exercising might seem daunting at first, it's an extremely easy solution to your problem, but it doesn't need to be medicated. In fact, most problems in general just don't need to be medicated. And I think probably if you take, what are the most prescribed medications in America? They're heart medicine, because heart disease is the number one killer. So cardiovascular meds, diabetes medicine, obviously, type 2 diabetes caused by obesity, sedentary lifestyles. And then we've got antidepressants are right up there.
Yeah, and it's all linked to a lack of activity.
It's all linked to a lack of activity. Every single disease, including, which people might not realize, depression and ADHD. So, and anxiety. So exercising regularly kind of allows your body, it releases some amount of, intense exercise releases some amount of cortisol, which is the stress hormone. But exercising regularly like that will decrease your like normal cortisol levels. It helps your body to cope with stress and anxiety and all these bad things, really. Exercising can help with all of that. And it also boosts mood because exercise increases your resting levels of dopamine and serotonin, which are basically the two hormones that control short and long-term contentment. And they're part of the reward system of the brain, and also norepinephrine. So those three things combined elevate mood to the point where they can eliminate depression entirely, because that's what depression is. That's what chronic depression is anyway. It's just a lack of those chemicals in your brain. It's a chemical imbalance in the brain.
So, yeah, and of course, exercise is only one part of this. The other big part of this is eating right. And I actually have another study here. It has to do with BDNF that found, This is a study from 2002 published by the University of California, Los Angeles. They found that high fat and high sugar diets actually reduces your hippocampal BDNF and reduces neuron production in your brain. So not exercising and eating unhealthy together is very damaging to your brain. But even if you are exercising, taking in large amounts of sugar will hinder your ability to learn and remember things, because it is hindering your neuron production in your brain.
That I didn't know. I didn't know that high carb, high fat diets were linked to the brain in that way.
Well, it's not just carbs, it's refined sugar.
Right, specifically. But those kind of diets, high in refined sugar or just excessively high in processed carbs, has other detrimental effects as well, because it keeps you in a cycle of being hungry all the time, because it's the kind of food that doesn't really keep you satiated. It causes quick spikes because glucose is the preferred energy source of your body, so it's always going to burn that first. So
yeah, and that's quick spikes in mood too.
Exactly. Blood sugar controls, blood glucose level controls a lot of things, including mood. And I talked about this in the fasting episode. When I was eating a shitty diet, or just eating like a lot and not focusing on, not fasting, not doing any of these things or exercising. It causes huge spikes in blood glucose and then huge crashes. And then you're always chasing, you know, the next meal, and you're eating more of the same shit, and you get into this cycle where your body kind of is used to eating like shit, but it's still going through this crash and lift of mood, of blood glucose, and it's terrible. You're irritable half the time and hungry the other half. So the only way to fix that is to permanently change your diet. It's also worth noting that exercise, though it has all these great effects, isn't necessarily going to make you lose a lot of weight. Almost all the weight loss you're going to see is from changing your diet. So if losing weight is your goal, exercise isn't necessarily the answer, though it can help for sure.
Yeah, it's part of it. There's two parts, because there's eating. Losing weight is really just a simple math equation. Burn more calories than you take in.
Right.
That's it. I mean, people try to complicate it to sell certain products or pills, but at the end of the day, it's just consume less calories than your body needs, and you will start burning your fat. It's that simple.
Yeah.
I have another study here. It's related to what we were just talking about with BDNF and sugar, you were talking about the chemical imbalances, and that's really what depression is in the brain. And this, when I saw this, I thought this was entirely unsurprising. This 2011 study published by Cambridge University Press found that it found a clear link, a correlation and causation link between a higher risk of depression and higher consumption of fast food.
Yeah, I mean, totally unsurprising. That probably has a lot to do with their metabolism. I mean, you're eating fast food all the time as a college student. That's one thing. And then as your metabolism slows down and you age and you become more and more sedentary and more reliant on prescription drugs and you're still consuming fast food regularly, yeah, you're going to turn into a human balloon. But, I mean, it's not – I'm just trying to say that it's not only – the fact that it's making people fat, it's also just like not a good diet to be eating. And also that kind of reliance on prepackaged consumables like that for enjoyment is not a fulfilling way of living. So if you're, you know, looking forward to your, you know, adult equivalent of McDonald's Happy Meal, this little box of joy. I mean, there's some people who, you know, you could target a lot of different people. Let's just say, white college-age women have a huge hard-on for Chick-fil-A. So they put Chick-fil-A on such a pedestal that it's like this meaningful thing in their life. Really, by going there and purchasing something, having to do next to no work to get your food, is just a recipe for disaster. There's no fulfillment there. I mean, humans were designed to hunt and gather and prepare their food. And that's part of living and enjoying and learning to enjoy that kind of things like we were designed to do, I think is a big part of having a fulfilling life. So I think reliance is worse in more ways than just causing obesity and being unhealthy.
And fast food is designed to make you want to eat more fast food. If you look at the McDonald's Happy Meal, it's almost like a gateway drug into a fast food addiction. Because it's so cheap and it's ridiculously affordable for all the items that they give you. They give you give you like apples, like a drink, fries, and a little burger. Plenty of food for a little child, and it costs next to nothing. All just to get them hooked on McDonald's for life. And
I'm not sure that they do sell it at a loss, but I do know they sell it at a very slim profit margin. And it is because it is a form of psychological warfare. They literally try to get kids addicted with the toys and everything. I mean, it's all purpose built to give them a nostalgia for McDonald's, or I mean, many other restaurants have copied the kids meal thing, but none is as iconic as McDonald's.
Right. And this is the company that used to sell toy cigarettes to kids. So
I didn't even know that was a thing, but
they used to have toy cigarettes, I think, in the Happy Meals.
Yeah, that, well, I mean,
maybe they were like gummies, so you would eat them.
It's definitely no better now. It's just less overt. I mean, if anything, it's a lot worse, I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a big part of their success, because they obviously can't stand on their food alone. Their food, for the most part, is complete shit. So they have to rely on other things. Their marketing, their branding, and their psychological manipulation of young Americans is a big driver in that. I actually have a lot more to say on fast food, but maybe I should keep that for another episode, because they're all kind of all you'll notice all fast food chains are kind of rebranding and becoming, you notice how all fast food are kind of like the same look aesthetically from the outside.
Yeah,
it's like they're all becoming these like boxy wooden, like big windows, like even Taco Bell. You look at Taco Bell, McDonald's, Wendy's.
They're all like gray and they're all like gray, black, and white. It's weird.
Yeah. And they're boxy. KFC doesn't have the same color scheme, but it's still, you know, this boxy, modern, open building. And it's the reason fast food chains did that is because of the rise of fast casual, you know, your Chipotle's, your Panera Breads, what have you. They kind of tried to imitate that. To draw back some of the success. So the idea is to basically, and it is working, is to trick people into thinking that they are something that they're not. They don't have to change their food or anything, but they give the impression of this clean, nice. I mean, you go in McDonald's now and it feels like a goddamn coffee shop. It's like Starbucks inside. Way too nice for the food that they're serving. It's just another level of dishonesty. Because it's like, I personally, if I'm going for fast food, I like fast food chains that know that they are shitty, greasy, grimy places.
What's and, that and one I'm that fine. Sells like the grilled cheese like burger? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not positive what you're referring to, but I've always held in the highest esteem as the pinnacle of fast food is Jack in the Box, because it is shitty. And they do have a late night, and they know it, and they don't try to hide it at all. So they do, yeah, they have a, it's like an after midnight only where it's two grilled cheese sandwiches and like as the buns and like a chicken cutlet with mozzarella cheese sticks on it, and it's all covered in cheese sauce. Oh, it's like no God. One is mistaking this for being healthy. Sure.
Do they call that the heart attack?
I mean, that would be fitting. Obviously, no human should ever consume something like that. But
you should eat like a
at least they're not
that.
Manipulating you or being deceptive in any way. Also, they're. I do have a soft spot in my heart as much as I don't like fast food. And I don't eat it hardly at all anymore. I do have a soft place in my heart for Jack in the Box tacos, which are 2 for $1, deep fried American cheese, mincemeat, just the worst food you can possibly get.
Is
and
this
shitty
an ad for
in
Jack
the best
in the Box?
Way. Yeah, they did pay me for this.
So. It's some I of the worst food that. You could ever eat, but at least they're honest.
Yeah, that should be their new marketing. There's not a whole lot of them.
Yeah. You know, speaking of eating, I have this study here from the UK from 2013 that actually found that the effects of eating breakfast for children has a positive effect on their behavior and their academic performance in school. And that's all relating to blood glucose levels, as you mentioned earlier, because if they're before they go into the school to learn and behave, if their blood glucose levels are not satisfied, their brains are going to be disinterested basically and not producing as much as they should be.
Right.
So kids should be eating breakfast. That's what the study says. Give them like Cheerios, something.
So,
you know, myself, so much breakfast food these days though is like ridiculous. I was in Giant the other day, the grocery store. Yeah. And I saw this. It was this cereal. It was churro cereal.
That almost sounds good. I'm not a cereal eater at all. Almost all American breakfast food is shitty. High fat, high carb.
It's all sugar.
It's not, yeah. It's not actually something sustained, like that will sustain a child's the energy well. Sure, there's that study, but a lot of the, like, breakfast, like most important meal of the day, a lot of that is just a straight up like psyop by like Kellogg's and General Mills and shit. Like I myself, this is why this study is kind of interesting to me. I'm not a believer in breakfast whatsoever. I think as a kid, I did eat breakfast every day before school. And I do think that there is something to that because obviously kids being on a regular American diet definitely, I mean, are going through this cycle of rising and crashing blood glucose levels, and they definitely need something before going to school, or they're going to be miserable and they're not going to be learning very effectively because their blood sugar is low and their mood is fucked up and everything. They're just out of whack because of this cycle they're in. But definitely, especially cereal companies telling you that breakfast is the most important meal of the day is pretty much a sham, because what kids should be eating are like, you know, substantial high protein, you know, eggs and bacon kind of shit. That could get you through a day.
Well, yeah, eating sugary cereal is probably detrimental actually, because what you said, their glucose will peak briefly and then it'll crash back down. What they should be eating, and this study doesn't endorse sugary cereal. This is from the Northumbria University, not some like front for Kellogg's.
Right.
At least I don't think, but they should be eating like oats, like oatmeal or eggs. Eggs are really good. Eggs, bacon,
right.
Something, you know, like I eat oatmeal every day for breakfast for, because it's a great source of energy for.
Well, it has a lot of fiber and it does keep you pretty filled, satiated for a long time. So I could see that being good. Yeah. I guess it's a complex carbohydrate though. I don't know much about that distinction, honestly. Should look into that. Well, on the topic of breakfast. So I do think breakfast for school age kids is important on up through high school. But talking about adults, I think breakfast is, it's probably best to skip breakfast altogether. Breakfast is kind of.
Really? You're an anti-breakfast guy.
I'm anti-breakfast.
Wow.
Well, most of the time I just kind of go with what my body tells me. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm not hungry at all. And that's coming from someone who's hungry a lot. I'm never hungry in the morning. So my body obviously doesn't want to eat. I don't know. But I mean, one meal a day, intermittent fasting, all show that letting your body, or only eating for like short periods of time, if your body is acclimated to that, is definitely better for your health in a number of ways. If you're waking up every morning and running 3 miles, like you literally might be, then that's
literally
a story. Yeah, that's a different story. The breakfast there might be good, though. That's not to say you have to eat to perform at your peak, because like we talked about in the fasting episode, you can actually perform athletically remarkably well. And it's an evolutionary mechanism for survival when you're in a state of like water fast ketosis.
That's true.
So I guess you shouldn't be doing that on a regular basis because you're probably going to become anemic. you can definitely perform very well, a lot better than you would think. I mean, common sense dictates that you have to, you know, marathon runners carb load and stuff. I'm not suggesting you could run a marathon necessarily, but on the third day of fasting, I felt fine exercising. And a lot of people say that they have better performance in the gym or running or what have you. So it's definitely not necessary to fuel your body. Though if you're in a regular schedule of it, like you are, it's probably the best bet.
Yeah, when it comes to eating for me, when it comes to dieting, yeah. I'm a little like, I'm just like analytical about it. I don't really ever consider like flavor as a major factor when I'm setting a diet, which is.
The people listening to this podcast, all five of them might not know this, but I'm the opposite of Conrad effect. I love food. One of my like main hobbies is like cooking and making good food. And I love like things that taste good. Like I will go so far out of my way. Like I'll cook like I'll spend an hour of my time cooking something to be delicious rather than just like eating something that's okay. So
here's my system.
Yeah.
Everything I eat is streamlined. It's all specifically picked for its nutritional value. I don't go off of flavor at all. I eat the same ham sandwich every day with the same stuff on it. Except for on Mondays and Fridays where I eat tuna.
Right. Yeah, I'm familiar with your diet.
Most everything in my diet I make in the microwave because it saves time. And then I eat on a schedule so I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, we are literally on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to eating. I like enjoying my food. And I think regimented, I think if you're eating the same thing all the time, no matter what it is, that can't be good for you. Having a varied diet is important, and you don't have that. I think there could be some actual health consequences.
Well, mine is varied in
continue to eat such a non-varied diet.
Mine is varied in the ingredients. I eat lettuce, I eat tomatoes, I eat blueberries, I eat bread sometimes, and I eat a lot of protein. So it is varied in that.
Yeah, I mean there's definitely some good stuff there, but I feel like. I mean, you're missing out on 90% of food, so I'm sure you're missing out on some key nutrients and some beneficial things. Variety is the spice of life.
Right, and I'm not saying I stick to this pretty hard, but I don't stick to it like religiously. Like I'll eat out occasionally with friends, and I'll get like, a burger or whatnot.
I just don't think it's the best strategy for eating.
Here's the thing: when it comes to regimented diets like this, like you don't have that, and you eat. Fairly healthy, although I know you have a history of not.
Yeah.
But like the difference between me and you is like your system requires a lot more like willpower and self-control to determine what you're going to eat on a day.
Yeah.
I like decide, say a month ago, what I'm going to eat today. And so I don't have to think about it.
There's absolutely
it takes a lot less willpower to eat right in a more regimented system.
Right. If you have it pre-planned and you already have every like your next 10 meals planned or whatever, then yeah, you're not going to be tempted to like divert. Oh, you see this cool thing at the grocery store. Oh, this pizza or whatever. Like I'm going to eat this all like now. Cause
that's what you do at the grocery store when we go.
I'm a huge impulse buyer. Although this summer I've reined in my impulses to an extreme degree. We should probably do an episode on like frugality and stuff because I've managed my impulses extremely well. So I rarely unnecessarily things in the grocery store anymore. Sometimes I impulse bought something today, but I think you'll appreciate it once you find out. Before we get too far away from the topic of breakfast, something that might come up in a future episode, I'm planning on trying. This was apparently like a fad like 2 years ago, so I'm way late to it. And I don't usually believe in fad shit, but it sounds legitimately good. And one of my friends said it tasted good. So I want to try, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Bulletproof Coffee. It's like, I think it's pretty popular for people on a ketogenic diet, which, I used to think keto was stupid, but now that I like actually fasted and was in ketosis for a while, I think once you become acclimated to it, it can definitely be pretty good. So I definitely see some merit to the ketosis diet, but I'm not doing it for that at all. I'm just doing it because it sounded good and it's a breakfast. It's full of sustenance and it has some other health benefits. It seems interesting. I just want to try it. See how it makes me feel.
Keto is pretty foreign to me. Maybe we'll make an episode on it. I'd have to look more into it though, but I've never considered trying it because I like oatmeal.
Right. I tried a cold turkey and I was miserable. I felt like absolute shit. Because my body
it's all that blood glucose
to carbs. Yeah. But now I like fasting for 4 days definitely reset, like kind of, I don't know, my cravings. Like I don't crave carbs nearly as much as I used to. Like I won't go out of my way to like add carbs to my meal because I just don't desire to eat them very much anymore. And I think that definitely has something to do with fasting and I'm not sure why, but I think it's just like I broke this weird like cycle or whatever I was in, for lack of a better term. But anyway, this bulletproof.
You're saying you broke out of a carb addiction?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, sugar is the most addicting substance.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's in like almost every. I mean, if you want to get people addicted to your food, you'd load it with fat and sugar because the human brain is programmed to like high density carbohydrates combined with high density fat, because that in a survival situation is what's going to keep you alive for the longest amount of time, those two things together. So if you're eating, you know, mac and cheese or a cheeseburger or a mozzarella stick, you know, every single bad food for you is amazingly good is high fat, high carb. And that's the kind of food people are addicted to. Pizza. I mean, look at all the most popular foods. Donuts, high fat, high carb, all of them.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, something that's high fat, high carb that's actually really, really tasty and probably not as bad for you is macadamia nuts and dates together. Because you got high fat in the macadamia nuts and dates. It's my favorite snack. But dates have so much sugar, though. Like two dates and it's like the equivalent of drinking like a can of Mountain Dew. It is absolutely insane. And I didn't realize that until someone.
Are you serious? I did not know that.
Yeah, because I would just sit there and eat like 8-10 dates. And it's like, oh, I just ate, you know, 200 grams of sugar or whatever. It's
but
insane.
That's like fruit sugar.
It's fructose. I mean, it's the same shit that's in high fructose corn syrup. It's not good. No matter how you're getting sugar, I mean, it's not good.
That's true. But it could be worse, what I'm saying.
Definitely could be worse. And there's also other like vitamins in dates and stuff that make it significantly less fat and fiber and stuff like that. So yeah, it could be worse. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons that it could be really hard for somebody to say like, get onto a diet is because like, they'll just look at like how we talk, we'll say like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. This is bad. There's all just all these restrictions. You can't eat this. You can't eat this. And eventually you're going to get tired of it. So my system is that like on the weekends, usually on a Saturday, I'll break the rules. I'll have like an ice cream or I'll eat like, I don't know, I'll go to like Chick-fil-A.
Sure. And there's not necessarily a problem with that.
And that's not bad because I'm doing it like once a week, usually less than once a week, actually.
Right.
But so you got to take breaks. That's true with everything. Even being healthy, you should take breaks.
Yeah.
Well, just to make sure you can keep doing it.
A lot of things follow the same pattern where the initial challenge is very great, but then after that, it's smooth sailing. Like with fast, the first day, you're going to be hungry. You're going to want to eat all the time. But then once you get in the habit, working out, same way. Working out used to be, you know, the biggest chore in the world for me. I would associate it with like pure discomfort. And now I've been exercising every day for like a month and a half, 2 months, something. And it's like the other day I literally found myself like enjoying the exercise. I was like exercising. And I'm like, this is kind of nice. And that's, it took me a month and a half to get there, but it's like, so even a lot, hell of a lot worse than like fasting or a diet, even, because I just didn't like exercising, but I got to the point where I actually like enjoy it now and also like feel a lot better after doing it. Like the other day, literally 2 days ago, I felt like sick and congested. And I'm like, I do not want to work out right now. And then I did. And like, I no longer, it was also after I just like ate a ton of food. I went to trivia night at this bar and we got like tons of appetizers. I was eating like loaded bacon, ranch, cheese fries and buffalo chicken dip and pretzels with beer cheese. And I just gorged myself and a chocolate lava cake with ice cream. Because my friend's dad bought it all for us. So I'm like, free food, you know, I'm going to eat all this. And I just gorged myself. And I felt so bad. Like, actually, like, flu-like symptoms afterwards. Because I think my body just hadn't had that kind of, like, blood sugar spike in so long.
Holy
Like,
heck.
Probably a month or so. I go to this trivia every week. So I eat unhealthily at it. But to that degree, my body just, like, is used to like a not terrible diet now, I guess. And that just hit me like a freight train. But then a couple hours later, I worked out and it literally like alleviated my symptoms. Like I wasn't congested. I didn't feel like shit. And it was awesome. And I'm like, wow, okay, maybe there's, it can be enjoyable. So
yeah, you know, I have a similar thing with running where if I'm feeling like groggy or especially if I'm feeling hungover, like from maybe like a Friday morning, if I'm feeling hungover, I'm not saying I'm an alcoholic, but you know, sometimes they have trivia on Thursdays.
Right. Yeah.
But if I'm hungover and like, I always run on Friday mornings.
Yeah.
I'll say to myself like, well, if I can do 3 miles in this condition and it's going to suck and I'm going to feel like crap next time I run 3 miles in a normal condition, not hungover, it's going to feel super easy.
Yep. It feels so much easier. You're absolutely right. When I'm tired and miserable and sore and I work out and then I can make it through that, it's like everything after that is like pedaling downhill. It's so much easier. So yeah, forcing yourself to get through stuff like that is part of developing a habit. So forcing yourself through like the hard parts of it and not making excuses as to why you shouldn't do it is how you're going to develop a habit. Like if I said, you know, if you make one excuse, you're bound to make more. So if I had skipped a day of working out and like, oh, I'm sore still, like it's probably bad, which may well be true. But still, if I'd used that as an excuse to not work out at all, then, you know, the next day I could be like, well, maybe, you know, like you can easily your body, your brain will make excuses. And once you've crossed one line, you are bound to cross them all. I mean, I heard a story about an alcoholic who had one beer at an airport after like a year and a half sober, and then within 12 hours was like drinking hand sanitizer. So it's like you take one step and what you just fall off. Well, that's an extreme example.
I didn't know hand sanitizer could get you going.
Well, it's definitely not healthy if it has isopropyl, but. Some of these new hand sanitizers they're coming out with are literally just ethanol and like thickeners. So you could definitely drink them. That's my take. I don't know if that's actually true. Don't drink hand sanitizer.
Jeez.
But
yeah, it's all about accountability. You know, you and me were workout accountability partners for a while.
Oh, the system.
The system.
I don't know if we want to let that secret out. We've got that one up our sleeves. That's our $1 million secret right there.
Yeah, well, we may as well share it, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I guess these are our early listeners. They might as well get in on it.
I don't know if we could, like, package and sell a system.
know, we invite people to our talks and then we tell them the system. They have to pay $120 to attend or get the course or whatever. And the course is literally just, you know, our system.
Oh, that's genius.
It works. It may sound simplistic, but it is. It's that system literally kickstarted me working out at all. It's the only reason I'm like remotely healthy today is because of that. So it obviously works.
Yeah, well, I'll share the system.
Okay, go ahead.
For our few listeners. Basically, yep. Me and Brian, 2 years ago, we started a system where we would work out every day, or it was 5 days a week.
Keep in mind, I was like pretty fat at this time. I was completely unhealthy. Yeah.
Yeah, Brian was fat and I hadn't worked out at that point for like 6 months.
Yeah.
So dire straits. But we came up with this system that we would each work out 5 days a week. And if one of us worked out and the other one didn't, the one who didn't work out owes the other one a 40. So like a 40-ounce beer. It was a 40 or a Four Loko. And this was sophomore year of college. So
yeah. And we were borderline alcoholics at the time. Yeah.
Of course, this had a huge motivation factor of not only like, oh, I could get free beer, but also if you miss a day at the gym and your buddy goes, you just lost $2.50.
Which at the time, for me, and presumably for Conrad too, was actually a fuck ton of money. Because I was living on very little. So it was a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. So for broke college students, that's a great system.
I think the same principles can be applied for anything, though. You can swap out 40s and Four Locos if that's not your scene. If you're straight edge, switch it out for something else. Switch it out for fucking a thing of kombucha. Maybe you're a hella, or like a cold brew. Like you have to buy me like a cold brew coffee or whatever. Because that shit's expensive. That's more than $2.50. You're paying like, I don't know, $6.99 for a stupid can of cold brew. Then yeah, do that. Or a can of GT's kombucha or whatever. And the system works because having that little financial and mental system, it gives you a level of accountability that's like just enough to get you actually going to the gym. And you can't let that like stack up. I mean, if your partner's going to the gym every day, and you're not, I don't care how much money you have. I mean, it was $5 every day is going to add up. That's, what's the math? I mean, $2,000 a year, give or take.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, we just revealed the secret to being healthy. Probably
that is the secret to being
secret
healthy.
That's ever been revealed.
It works best if you're a broke college student, but
it could definitely be applied elsewhere. You just have to get a little.
It could be applied elsewhere. Like
it could be applied.
Like even say if you have a buddy and you say, like if you miss a day, then you're taking the two of you out to lunch and you have to pay for it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a lot more severe, but also probably more fitting.
And it's more motivating because it's more severe.
Exactly. And there will be days where you have legitimate excuses not to go. I mean, it doesn't matter. You stay with the system. You still, if you're sick, if you're dying, it doesn't matter. You still owe the person a, I mean, if you're seriously ill, maybe the other partner could let up. I mean, if you're terminally ill.
And break the system? Matter. I don't know about that.
I don't know. I think there was a period of time where I was very ill and you gave me a couple free passes, but.
I gave you like.
I mean, it's a blood pact. Like there's no going back on it. That's the most important thing is you can't, you have to stay committed.
Well, the time I gave you a free pass was when you were already like 340s in the hole,
right?
Basically owed me like $10.
Yeah, I was in a state of I was usually in the hole, but it still motivated me enough that I was working out most days. I mean, you just were working out every day.
Yeah, and this for you. I mean, you started that year. You were much heavier, and this coincided with your pneumonia, and you actually lost what like 40 pounds.
Yes. So I was doing this and then over winter break, I got pneumonia and pleuritis and was also had been working out every day. So within a month span of doing this 40 system and also becoming severely ill, I lost 40 pounds in 1 month.
Pretty
I was
incredible.
Also like depressed and not eating very much either. So that was part of it, but like insane amount. Like, I didn't even know it was possible to lose that much weight because I was basically eating nothing because I was very ill. And before that, I was very depressed. So exercising all the time, like working out regularly, eating extremely little, and being very sick all combined to make me lose a lot of weight.
That's the three. So that's those are the three parts of the most effective weight loss system ever: depression, pneumonia, and regular workouts.
Yep, you heard it here first.
You heard it. If you want to lose a lot of weight and fast, you need to get depression, pneumonia, and a workout buddy.
Yep. Well, it's also the perfect system because working out will also, if what we've been saying is true, will also lift you out of that depression. So, and it was, that was true for me. So, hey.
That's insane. You know, like,
it is perfect.
The most, like, insane weight loss stories I hear are never from proven methods that work. They're always from, like, the most self-destructive methods.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I knew this guy who used to be fat at, like, the beginning of high school, and then he got really skinny. And how he did it was, like, he got, like, addicted to Red Bull, started, like, running a lot and not eating.
Yep.
And he lost a ton of weight, and then he went to the hospital because he lost like 50 pounds in a month.
Yeah.
And the doctor was like, yeah, it's a good thing you're here when you are, because you could have died, but yeah, you lost 50 pounds.
Yeah. So basically the way to get all these great effects, notice there's a commonality of not eating or eating very little. You could just fast. You could just do a nice 4-day fast, lose a substantial amount of weight. There's other health benefits. I mean, and it's a lot less risky. Though, depending on who you are, there's some risk. If you're on, like, prescription meds, you should probably consider that.
Bringing it back to the brain, which we were talking about
earlier,
the only risk when it comes to fasting is if you do it for too long. So, say, like, longer than probably a week. Your brain starts to, like, eat itself, basically, and gets less effective.
Right. You can start eating your own organs if you fast for too long. But before that happens, you will know it, because your body will tell you by releasing a lot of ghrelin. You will become very hungry before that ever happens. So you will be hungry at first, day one or two. Then there will be a period where your hunger is greatly reduced for a good portion of the fast, if it's like a week-long fast. And then you will get very hungry again. And then you should just eat then, because that's your body telling you you need to. But if you go past that stage, really, that's where the risk lies of actually eating your own organ, which isn't probably not healthy. I had another thing that, back to the main topic of things that you're doing or not doing that are bad for your brain. This, I don't have any sort of scientific research to back this up. It's just my own experience. Is that, well, not reading makes you stupid. That's my thesis.
Okay. Well, here's the thing, Brian.
Yeah.
I have a source for you that'll back
there that
up.
There we go. All right, cool. Good teamwork.
So this study called the 100 Days of Cognitive Training Enhanced Broad Cognitive Abilities in Adulthood. It's a finding from the Cogito study. I think it's an acronym for something, but basically this was a collaboration between the Center for Lifespan Psychology in Berlin and a Center for Research on Education and Development in Frankfurt, and also a few universities in Sweden. Basically found that not engaging in like cognitive workouts, so not reading and not solving puzzles with your brain, makes your brain lazy and less effective over time.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me. What I was going to say is I used to be a great writer. Good for my age, at least. I don't know if my writing would stand up today. In like grade school, in like fifth grade and stuff, I was like a great writer. And then, like, because I was reading a ton too. And reading is a lot of material. I mean, obviously you emulate it to some degree, but also it just makes you better at verbalizing and writing and putting your thoughts into words, because you're being exposed to it all the time. It's obvious. It's the same thing as like learning a language. It makes perfect sense. So I found recently I've been trying to write I'm in a sort of musical project right now. I've been trying to like write lyrics and write little tidbits, because one of my good friends is doing a lot of like writing, and it's very good. So he writes like little like short stories and stuff that are kind of like insane, but they're, I really like his like writing style. He'll write like short, like snippets, like broken, like schizophrenic little bits, but it's really good. It's very like visceral writing. And I tried to put thoughts into that. I can still write haikus very well, but other than that, it's like I don't have the kind of ability to write like I did when I was reading heavily. And I saw someone like sent me something that I wrote like 2 years ago, because they like had remembered it and brought it up, and I read it and it was really good. And it's like, I definitely couldn't write something like that today. And it's because being in college, I don't have to read any, and I haven't been reading for pleasure. What I have been reading for pleasure has been like cookbooks and technical writing. Like I haven't been reading like novels or even nonfiction. So that part of my brain that used to be really good at writing is just like atrophied, I guess.
That is kind of ridiculous how little you actually have to read in college.
Yeah.
It's like on the surface, it looks like you have to read, but you just don't have to read.
You don't. And what you do have to read, especially as like a business major, is, I mean, it's not anything that's going to improve your cognitive function. It can teach you things, sure, but it's technical writing. I mean, once you've read one textbook, you've read them all. Right?
Yeah. Well, Brian, how about you come up with a haiku right now?
Okay, sure.
You said you could do that.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot.
Write me a haiku.
Fasting is very good. It makes you...
Wait, isn't the first one supposed to be five?
That was five. Fasting.
That was six.
That was six.
Fasting is very
good. Also, it's going to be a shitty haiku anyway. Forget it. I'll write you some haikus. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah, forget that ever happened. So back to the main topic. The final thing that I have that you're doing that is bad for your brain, and in my opinion, the most detrimental thing for your brain, is technological addiction. And nearly every single person in America, especially people under the age of 30, who to some degree had access to mobile technology in their childhood or young adult life, are addicted, if not completely psychologically dependent on technology, on social media, on screens of any sort, television, anything. So the problem runs very deep. I mean, it's certainly not just people under 30. It's people. I mean, some of the most addicted people are sedentary, you know, retired people who just sit in their chairs and watch TV all day, because it is, even that is psychologically addictive. And technology is being more and more designed to be addictive. Things like TikTok, Instagram, Facebook are designed to get you in feedback cycles, dopamine feedback loops, that keep you coming back, and they're designed to be chemically addictive. So like everything that's addictive, technology is the worst possible thing for your brain. It's a cancer on your brain, and it's a cancer on living a happy life as well. So, but there's far too much to discuss in this episode about technology, I think.
Yeah, so in the next episode, we will continue our talk about what's good and bad for your mental health and your brain, and especially what causes chemical imbalance, which can lead to depression, a lack of learning ability, and stuff like that. But that's what we're going to talk about in the next episode. I hope you learned something useful from this episode. Basically, the lesson is like eat right and exercise. That's what it all comes down to.
Yep.
But yep. As we'll show in the next episode, the things you're consuming in media can also have a very bad effect on your brain. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.
Yep. See ya.